Okay, so my the subject of my talk is about certain analysis questions at the highest degree of non-commutativity. Problems which arise in free probability are connected to the operator algebras, random multimetric systems. So in commutative analysis, one deals the main object, simplified way on Rn, is that you have the n partial derivatives, d over dxj, and then you have the exponentials, these exponentials are xc, which are eigenfunctions for all this d over dxj. Then they give rise to the Fourier transform. This transforms these partial derivatives into multiplication operators, and the Fourier transform leads to duality, which is, of course, a particular case of duality for abelian groups. More general, what happens is Hopf algebras, you know the story. So, ultimately, in commutative analysis, big role is played by some kind of bi-algebra duality. And what I want to explain is what one can do in the highest, in the case of the highest degree of non-commutativity. So in that situation, there are again certain bi-algebras and duality for those bi-algebras which play an important role. Somehow that's what replaces the Fourier transform. And the theory takes the shape of a spectral, kind of spectral theory with non-commutative scalars, that is the situation when, say, one would have an operator on a space, and instead of the complex numbers, one would have some algebra B, and there is absolutely no relation assumed between B and X, so the highest degree of non-commutativity. So the replacement for the partial derivatives is the free difference quotient derivation. So in that case, we're having B of X. These are the polynomials in one indeterminate with coefficients in B. And this is, one assumes the following, that the only B is an algebra with 1 over the complex numbers, and one assumes that only the 1 from B commutes with X. So if you take, for instance, in B a complement to the one-dimensional space of multiples of the identity, then the identity commutes with X, but all the other ones don't commute. And this amount that B of X is actually some free product with amalgamation of B over the multiples of the identity with the polynomials in one variable. And the monomials are now non-commutative monomials. We have B naught X, B1 X, etc., Bn. And the free difference quotient derivation does the following thing. When it sees an X, it puts a tensor, but it does it only one time. So every time you get a new term and you add all these, which is, of course, can also be expressed in another way. It means that, so it's a derivation into B of X. Tensor B of X is not like the usual partial derivatives which go from one algebra into itself. It's B of X into B of X, tensor B of X. And B of X is, of course, a B of X bimodule. So it's the derivation into this bimodule which takes X into 1 tensor 1. And B, the scalars, go to 0. And the partial free difference quotients are a generalization of that. So this is a one-variable situation, so to say. The Partial free difference quotients are then from B with x1, xn into B of x1, xn tensor 2. So instead of one variable, I put n. And again, this x1, xn satisfy, there's no commutation assumed. And del j b is 0, del j x k is del j k 1 tensor 1. And so this partial free difference quotient works like that. If it sees an x k, it puts a tensor. Now, in in the questions which arising for Neumann algebras and in other situations, the polynomials are not enough. What one looks actually at is some larger ring. For instance, one has B a subalgebra of a von Neumann algebra. X is an element also in that von Neumann algebra, is very often a 2-1 factor. And one looks at a certain larger algebra to which this free difference quotient extends, things like in this smooth subalgebras which you have in non-commutative geometry, this kind of stuff. So it's a certain enlargement of the polynomials and into B of X tensor 2 and del J B of X1, this larger ring into B of X1 Xn, the tensor product of two copies. That's how the partial free difference quotients work. The one variable situation is, here is the explanation why I call it free difference quotient, is so having is the one variable and B, the algebra B is complex numbers, then it's then B of X is just the polynomials, classical polynomials with complex coefficients. The tensor product of two copies of C of X can be identified with polynomials in two variables. And then the free difference quotient becomes just the classical difference quotient, so the polynomial P of X goes into P of X minus P of Y divided by X minus Y. And the essential property which makes all this duality possible is that the free difference quotient satisfies co-associativity, namely del XB tensor identity composes del XB is identity tensor del XB composes del XB. So what does this mean? That if you have such a non-commutative monomial, B0, X, B1, X, B, Bn, etc., you take one times this free difference quotient. So when you see an X, you put a tensor. And then to take some kind of second order derivative, it's the same thing if you do the operation on the left term or on the right term. Basically, what you end up is that for every pair, you've put two tensors for every pair of X's, and that's the co-associativity. So it's quite obvious property. And similarly, if you have the multivariable situation, so you have this partial free difference quotient del 1 up to del n, then you get the replacement for the co-associativity are these relations, which are the same, are in this non-commutative context, the analog of the permutation of the partial derivatives, the permutability of the partial derivatives. But you should, however, note that there is still a bit of order. You see, you have del I, and then you have del j, so you take a pair of an xi to the left and of an xj to the right, and it's after all these pairs you write it in this way. Now, there is an underlying biallgebra structure, because the free difference quotient satisfies this co-associativity property. Then this gives rise to a bi-algebra. And the bi-algebra is a ring, not necessarily with one, an algebra is a complex number, say. Mu is the multiplication. And del is a co-multiplication, which is co-associative. That's what you get. And this type of relation, that it's at the same time a derivation and co-multiplication. So this gives rise to this relation, del composed, that's the derivation property. Del composes mu, is identity tensor mu, del tensor identity, plus mu tensor identity, composes identity tensor del. This structure was discovered by Johnny and Rota. It first appears in a paper from 79 of Johnny and Rota. And it was connected with Giancarlo Rota's revival of umbral calculus. And he gave to this the name infinitesimal bi-algebra. I should, however, say that at that time, Rota, the only example he had of such a bi-algebra was just this one, this C of X polynomials in one variable. So it was not, it was that he saw from this polynomials in one variable with complex coefficients. It's a very natural structure, and he had the idea that of its importance. I arrived from free probability questions that this structure independently many years later without knowing anything about Johnny and Rota, and for a number of years I wrote papers without knowing about the combinatorial work. And there I gave this the name generalized difference quotient ring. So if you look at one of my papers, you may find generalized difference quotient ring. And then there are other papers in combinatorics where this type of bi-algebras are called Newtonian bi-algebras, epsilon bi-algebras, epsilon Hopf algebras, etc. There are small variations of what is required additionally to this structure. But the essential thing is that the co-multiplication is a derivation. Now, the interesting thing about these algebras is that if you look at this relation and you dualize it, then you see, so you pass from A to some dual of A, then this relation with mu and mu dual and del dual transforms into the same relation. This is something which Rota didn't see. And it was actually found independently and around the same time. It was the same summer, I understand, 1999, when myself and Marcelo Aguiar, independently, he for combinatorial reasons, I had things that had to do completely different things in free probability connected with subordination and completely analytical things, free Markovianity, etc. So what happens is this relation, if you dualize, you get the same relation with del and mu with Rolle's exchange. So this class of bi-algebras is self-dual. It is something like the Hopf algebras. These are not Hopf algebras, but it is again a class of self-dual bi-algebra, so the dual of infinitesimal bi-algebra is again an infinitesimal bi-algebra. Now what happens in the case you have, so in classical analysis, the situation of having several variables is very far from the case of one variable. In the multivariable situation, things are not quite so. It is a multivariable free situation. So, say we have A mu and del 1 del n, which satisfy this del I tensor identity composed del J, identity tensor del J composed with del I. That's a multivariable situation of an infinitesimal kind of infinitesimal algebra. I call them multivariable generalized difference quotient rings. So there is a reduction trick. Having several variables is not, is essentially not more general than having one variable, because you see, if you have, and here you have b x1 xp squared del 1 del p squared, so it's good to take the number of variables squared, then you can transform this into a one variable situation. So you, d becomes now the p by p matrices over b, mp tensor b, and x is some combination of xi, some matrices with xi's put in these matrices, with the entries of the matrix. And the situation is rather equivalent. It's interesting that you have this p squared. It's a bit like the situations with algebra, subalgebras, like you have in subfactors, you know, you're more comfortable with the p squared. You can also deal sometimes with commutative situations, but in any case, it's working better with the square than with p. So because of this situation, it is sufficient for many questions to concentrate on the case where you have one variable. So you have this b of x, and to the free difference quotient del xb, and to study duality, etc., and many questions, it is sufficient to concentrate on the one variable situation. So I started by saying that I want something which is like the Fourier transform. I said that the theory looks a bit like kind of non-commutative spectral theory. And here is the reason why this happens. To study duality, you have to study for these bi-algebras the co-representations or the group-like elements, how you want to call them. So you have A mu del, it's a bit like what you do for Hopf algebras, but these are not Hopf algebras. So you have alpha, which are n by n matrices with elements in A, and you assume that you have the group-like element condition. So if you apply del to each entry of the matrix alpha, you get a matrix with entries in A tensor A, and it is the product of alpha with alpha, well, the matrix product, but when the entries get to be multiplied, you multiply them by the tensor product. And here is the fact which I became aware of, is that many of the co-representations arise as some kind of generalized resolvent. So you have, say you have a ring A, you have such an infinitesimal bi-algebra, which has a special element, an element del x, which has a property that it's that del applied to x is one tensor one, and then we look at B, the kernel of del, which we're going to call the scalars. So this is a variable, it's what goes into one tensor one, and B, the kernel of del, is the scalars. And then these kind of elements, so beta 1, beta 3, beta 2, beta 3, are n by n matrices with entries in B, so they are scalars, what we'd call. And we're looking at this type of generalized matricial resolvent. So you see, what one is doing here, If you ignore the B's, it would be some, these B's outside, it would be something like a scalar minus X inverse. But these are matrices, the X becomes a diagonal matrix, which is multiplied by a beta 1, beta 3. Then the beta 1, beta 3 get out to balance all this. So it's a kind of generalized matricial resolvents. They are matricial, and there is the further generalization that the entries are this type of scalars which don't commute with the operator. So these are the co-representations. In the special case, when you take just the beta 2 and beta 1, beta 3, one, you end up with this type of simpler resolvent. So it's beta, it's an n by n matrix with entries in B, and minus x, the minus x tensor in, the diagonal matrix with x is on the diagonal, and beta minus x should be invertible. And what is then the duality transform? So you take an element in the dual, a functional in the dual of A, and you apply it to each entry of such a co-representation, then you get a numerical matrix. So you start with A dual, and for each co-representation, you end up with a certain matrix, the size being the dimension of the co-representation. And then, of course, the dual of the co-multiplication, so you have the co-multiplication of A, its dual becomes the multiplication in A, in the A dual, this A dot, what I've denoted. And then you know that to take this product of the C's is the same thing as multiplying the corresponding matrices. So this replaces what you do with the Fourier transform. The Fourier transform, you apply the derivative to something, it is the same thing as multiplying the Fourier transform. Here, is this, you get this bunch of matrices, and it's the same thing as multiplying these matrices. And, of course, this object is nice if you look only at the dual multiplication, but you have also to dualize the multiplication, which would yield some co-multiplication on this object. And besides that, you know, all these resolvents, all these things, they depend in a certain way analytically on the parameters, on these betas, etc. So you have a more complicated object. It's not this bunch of matrices, this bunch of representations. It's an object with a richer structure. And one needs to replace this product of matrices, of matrix algebra, by a certain structured object. And that's what I'm going to explain. So usually I talk about the object which one gets using just these co-representations, the beta minus X tensor identity. That's the affine object. And what I want to explain today is what one gets if one uses this more general resolvent. So you see, these types is beta 3, beta 2, etc., beta 2, beta 1, these three things, not just this one, the affine object, but the more complicated object. So in the classical case, this beta, so classical case, I mean that the algebra B is the complex numbers, you see, it's like taking resolvents and not looking that the complex plane has a point at infinity. So it's the affine situation, the affine situation, which is part of the Riemann sphere. And I must say something about this. Is that the object one gets in the affine case does not use at all the algebra structure of B. So you could have, instead of B for this dual object, you could have a Banach space. You don't need a Banach algebra. Whereas for the completion to construct this non-commutative analog of the Riemann sphere, you need to have on this scalar some multiplication. I'm not sure that this multiplication must be necessarily associative. What I'm going to say here is about the situation in B is a Banach algebra. But it's possible that many of these things work also when B is just an algebra, a non-associative algebra. So let me explain a little how this looks in the classical case, in the simplest case, the complex number, what we know so well. So what is the structure which I want to explain how it extends to this completion? So the affine structure is the following. You have B is a complex number. And the affine structure is this. On the complex numbers, you look at open sets, and for each open set in the complex numbers, you consider the algebra of scalar holomorphic functions, F from omega to C, which is a natural multiplication, so it's an algebra, and with the difference quotient, co-multiplication. Of course, it's a bi-algebra in the topological sense, that is, the result is an analytic function of two variables, so it's a topological tensor product of the analytical functions on omega with itself. And then, what happens if we go over to the Riemann sphere? What is the situation? So having the one-dimensional complex projective space, that's the Riemann sphere. And on the Riemann sphere, we're having open sets, omega, and then we're getting, again, a bi-algebra structure. Namely, we're taking the holomorphic functions on omega with their natural multiplication, and the co-multiplication is given, again, by the difference quotient, so f of z1 minus f of z2, over z1 minus z2. Now, this structure is not invariant under the automorphisms of the projective space under these fractional linear transformations. And the affine space has a special position in this, and the point at infinity has also a special behavior. And what happens is that actually the result of the difference quotient, when you hit the point at infinity with any of the variables, gives you zero. So it's this type of structure. If you look at the formula for the difference quotient, you get into the functions which vanish at infinity. And again, for every open set, you have this type of algebra. You have the analytic functions with this bi-algebra structure. And it is a good occasion also to understand a bit what happens with the duality structure in this case. The duality structure, which goes usually from these rings, and which I won't have, from the operator and the scalars, I won't have time today to go into that. So I better give you this type of duality statement, which shows how the duality occurs on the Riemann sphere in the classical case. There is a nice way to see the duality. Namely, if you have a compact subset in the affine part, so compact subset of the complex plane, and you take the germs of holomorphic functions, so the holomorphic functions in the neighborhood of the complex number, then the germs, of course, are again a bi-algebra under the difference quotient. And you have then the other algebra, you have the holomorphic functions in the complement of the compact set on the Riemann sphere, yeah? So you have here germs around K, and you have holomorphic functions, and this index here, infinity, means that I am looking at the holomorphic functions vanishing at infinity. If I did my computations correctly, you'll endow this bi-algebra with a co-multiplication with a minus. I hope I put the right sign there. So now we have the germs of holomorphic functions. It's dual. which are analytic functionals. And of course, on the dual, you get this bi-algebra structure, of course, a topological bi-algebra structure. So the difference quotient becomes co-multiplication among analytic functionals. The multiplication becomes a derivation on the dual. And this familiar duality, which you know for functions, becomes now a duality for bi-algebras, for topological bi-algebras, infinitesimal bi-algebras, which takes such a functional into what is its Cauchy transform. The Cauchy transform of a functional, so you apply this mu to the Cauchy kernel zeta minus z, where z inverse, where z is in the compact set, and zeta is in this complement on the Riemann sphere. So when I apply mu to this, of course I apply mu to the function of z, and the result is a function of zeta, which is a function on the complement of k on the Riemann sphere. Now, what happens is that this Cauchy transform is a bi-algebra morphism. So it takes this bi-algebra structure into the bi-algebra structure of the difference quotient on the complement on the Riemann sphere. So what I want to do, I want to explain how this generalizes, how this whole analytic function theory should be generalized for the case when the complex numbers are replaced by B. Now, I'm going to use the word completion. In the classical case, completion, I mean, indeed, the Riemann sphere is the completion of the affine space. You add one point, and the point is in the closure of the affine space. In the case of B, I'm going to use the word completion, but it is in a more algebraic sense, because the affine space is not dense in what would be, not necessarily dense in what would be the replacement for the Riemann sphere. The affine space, I mean, this has to do with things like people here in the Elliott program are very familiar with stable rank questions and this type of things, which make it that what will be the replacement for the Riemann sphere, the affine part is not necessarily dense in it. So let's say we have B a unital Banach algebra, and then the replacement for the Riemann sphere is the fully matricial B Grassmannian. So these are what I call fully matricial objects, that is some kind of hierarchical hierarchy of spaces. There will be hierarchies of maps, hierarchies of spaces, etc. So kind of hierarchical object. So the fully matricial B Grassmannian, denoted by GR of B, is something with components GRN of B, where this nth component, GRN of B, is actually the one Grassmannian of the n by n matrices in B. And what is the one Grassmannian? The one Grassmannian for an algebra is the right A submodules in A, direct sum with A, such right A submodules P, with complement P prime, such that both P and P prime are equivalent as right A modules with A. So say it is a bit the situation which you have for a graph, a graph of an operator. So the kind of situation for a graph and which has also a complement. But of course you take all the submodules like that, so it's a Grassmannian. And for instance, if you would take B to be the K by K matrices, you end up with the Grassmannian of K planes, K dimensional subspaces in 2K dimensional space. So in particular, the one Grassmannian of C is the complex numbers is just the Riemann sphere. So what is the replacement of open sets? The open sets are the fully matricial, I'm going to say without open, then I'm going to make them open, that's not, It's the fully matricial subsets of the Grassmannian. So these are hierarchical objects, omega is omega n, n in n, where omega each, so it's a set, it's a multiset, or how would you like to call it, it's a collection of sets, where each omega n is in the n by n Grassmannian. It has the following property. If I look at omega n plus n, the things which are a direct sum from something in the n by n Grassmannian, at n Grassmannian, then it's a direct sum of something which is in omega n and something which is in omega n. And the second condition is that S, if S is a similarity with complex coefficients, so if it's an element in the general linear group with complex coefficients, so if not with B, it's with complex coefficients, if this acts on mn of B, mn of B, direct sum with mn of B, you can left multiply with this matrix, S0, 0, S. And then the condition is that this omega n goes into omega n. So there are two conditions. There is this GLNC invariance of the set omega, and there is the condition that the n plus n component, if you look at the things which consists of two blocks, is exactly what comes from omega n and what comes from omega n. And then the generalization of the functions. These are the simplest type of such hierarchical functions, is that these are a function on such omega, A omega, is a collection of functions, Fn, such that Fn goes from omega n into the n by n matrices. And then on the graph of the you have two conditions, Fn plus n restricted to things which are direct sum is Fn, direct sum with Fn, and Fn with respect to a similarity is S of Fnp, S inverse. You see, there are other situations in mathematics where you run into hierarchical situations, like the endpoint functions when you do quantum field theory and see situations like that. So it's, since hierarchical objects are natural somehow. Now what is the fully matricial affine space in this? The fully matricial affine space, so this type of space, it replaces the Riemann sphere that I've discussed. In it sits the fully matricial affine space, which I denote by M of B. The components are the N by N matrices of B. And then the way this affine space is embedded into the Grassmannian is T goes into the graph of T. It's actually not the graph of T. It's the graph of the left multiplication of mm of B by the operator T. So it's the map of a left multiplication operator by T on mm of B. That's a replacement. And why is this a generalization of the situation on the Riemann sphere? I'm going to explain this in the case of the complex numbers, these, the complex numbers. So if I have omega in C, an open set, then to an open set in the complex numbers, I can associate such a fully matricial object, namely omega with capital omega with components omega n, and omega n consists exactly of the n by n matrices for which the spectrum, the eigenvalues, sit inside the lowercase omega. That's a fully matricial object. And open sets, in the case B equals C, the fully matricial open sets are exactly parameterized by the open sets in the complex plane. So it's exactly the same situation. It's not that there arise more open sets. So the whole situation, complex numbers, open subsets, is the same thing as the fully matricial open sets in the case B is the complex numbers. And the functions, a function f from omega to c gives rise to a holomorphic function, such a fully matricial holomorphic function, simply by functional calculus. So the nth component fn applied to an n by n matrix spectrum in t is a functional spectrum in omega is a functional calculus f of t, which is a holomorphic function there. And well, I've stated it as a theorem, but I would have to write a lot. It's not exactly a theorem unless I state all the things which I don't have time to state. The theorem is the following, that for the fully matricial open subsets of the Grassmannian, there is a natural bi-algebra, infinitesimal bi-algebra structure, which generalizes the one on the complex number. So you have, in case B is the complex numbers, it's the same thing. And there is another reason why it's a natural one, which I'm going to say immediately. So for each such fully matricial open subset of the B Grassmannian, A omega is a topological infinitesimal bi-algebra with derivation, co-multiplication, and here it goes into two variable fully matricial functions, which I did not have time to explain, but it's a certain tensor product of A omega with itself. And the important thing is that the duality transform of del xb of the free difference quotient is b maps into this type of A omega. So it is a good definition. The definition is done by going over to certain realization, certain perturbations of the subspace. It's a pretty complicated procedure, but it's natural, and the proofs are pretty long computations. But so on the structure of a fully matricial of the Riemann sphere with this infinitesimal bi-algebras on the open set, the structure has a generalization when the complex numbers are replaced by B. So there is something which replaces the difference quotient f of z1 minus f of z2 over z1 minus z2, where instead of z, you have an element in the algebra B. But this can happen only if you work with matricial objects. Now, I want to explain a little why these things are of some interest. One of the reasons was the free entropy theory. So the free difference quotient and duality, etc., they are very intimately related to free entropy in free probability. Namely, it's through the free analog of the Fisher information. So here I have a 2-1 factor, and I have here B, a subalgebra, a von Neumann subalgebra, and the variable x, self-adjoint, if you want. Then there is the free score function, which is analog of the statistical score in the classical theory of the Fisher information. What is the free score? The free score is an affiliated operator, when it exists, affiliated operator is a von Neumann algebra, such that tau of jxb, so you transform the operator, affiliated operator, make it the density of a functional, is the trace state tensor, the trace state composed with a difference quotient. So if you dualize, the free score is the dual multiplication of the trace state with itself, and the Fisher information is tau of jxb squared. So the Fisher information is exactly the derivation of the free entropy when you let the variable execute a free Brownian motion, then it's Fisher information, which is the derivative of the entropy. So having the Fisher information is an as general, is somehow having the same understanding the Fisher information is a bit as general as having the entropy theory. The same thing come up also when you have the variational problem for the free entropy. So again, this x, you take now n variables if you want, you could also do the one variable situation. So again, when you have n variables, xj star, n tau, so again, one factor is a trace state if you want, the variational problem is to maximize chi of x1, xn minus tau of a polynomial in x1, xn. This is a generalization to n variables of the familiar variational problem for the logarithmic energy, which comes up in random matrices. So you have log s minus t d mu s d mu t minus integral p of t d mu of t. And this gives rise to the variational equations, tau tensor tau composes del j, is tau of del j p x1 x this other delta, which is also a derivative defined by Giancarlo Rota. Well, it's a generalization of this. Again, comes from Giancarlo Rota from combinatorics. It's a cyclic partial derivative. And the cyclic partial, derivatives, or in general, the cyclic derivatives have also a nice way of being expressed in infinitesimal by algebra terms. So this new derivative, the cyclic derivatives, are just the old derivatives composed with permutation of the two terms. So it's the derivative which goes into algebra, tensor algebra. Then you switch the terms and you take the multiplication. And the variational equations are tau tensor tau composed with del j equals this dual multiplication. So you have here a situation because you have n variables, you have n co-multiplications, and this gives rise to have such a multivariable generalized difference quotient ring. And this gives rise to n dual multiplications in the dual. And then it's that the cyclic, that the these co-multiplications are equal to the co-multiplications are equal to the cyclic derivatives. So these are the same equations as those which arise from a multi-matrix model in the large n limit, when you put this type of density, Cn, exponential minus n trace of a polynomial a1an. There is another thing I'd like to point out. Some uses of this B-resolvent, so this type of non-commutative spectral theory where you have maybe matricial or you have resolvents with coefficients in B. There are many situations when it appears, not meaning that I'm quoting all, but one of the oldest and interesting situations is the work of Doyle in electrical engineering around 1982, about which you can read in the book of Helton and co-workers, which uses in such situations this type of B-resolvents. In the work I did on B-valued R-transforms, free probabilities, so the kind of stuff which is used in to deal with free products, with amalgamations and this stuff, the earliest version of this work is a preprint which I wrote in 1986. And there you have, again, what you use B-valued resolvents. So it's this you invert to get R-transforms. And what's interesting is that you have exactly the problem of an inversion at infinity, for which now this use of the Grassmannian, this type of completion at infinity, is the object which was missing in this construction. I was inverting into some open subset around infinity. Now I know that it's really an inversion around infinity having the Grassmannian. This is also, this type of B-valued R-transforms are also what R-transforms and these resolvents are also what is so important is the work of Dimas Liachtenko on Gaussian and random band matrices, where he found a way to bring the Gaussian and random band matrices into the framework of free probability by using free products with amalgamation. And at the end, I mean, last but not least, there is a sweeping generalization to several independent IID Gaussian random matrices of the almost sure largest eigenvalue result, or by Uffe Hagerup and Stinton Jensen. It's around 2001, and which really shows on in a concrete situation of this Gaussian random matrices the power of using operator valued resolvents and matricial resolvents. It shows that this situation, of course, this is really an extraordinary tour de force, this work of Uffe and Stein. It shows that the technology of resolvents, of this generalized resolvents, can really be put to use. You may think about this, that it's an impossible machinery, that it's so complicated to use as resolvents. Well, here you have a situation where this type of resolvents in a with a lot of very hard estimates, etc., are put to work, and you can get this remarkable result. So this is what I wanted to do.